Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/TheBarn. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TheBarn.
Hey, what's up? This is Aaron Gillespie from Under Oath and The Almost, and you're listening to the Vulgar Display of Podcast, Pop Punk Pizza Podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the Vulgar Display of Podcast and the Pop Punk Pizza Party Podcast, live from the Barn Studios. We are joined with a special guest online today. We have Mr. Aaron Gillespie from Under Oath and The Almost. Aaron, how are you, man?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing really well. We are excited you're coming into town. You're getting ready to kick off a tour with The Almost and be playing the album, the full album, Southern Weather. You're coming into St. Louis with Emery Friday, May 10th at Red Flag in St. Louis. Looking forward to having you back in town.
You bet. Stoked to be there, man. I love St. Louis. I was talking about St. Louis the other day, actually. So, yeah, I'm stoked to come, man. Super stoked to come.
Getting ready to kick off tour here in a couple of days, right? Are you guys ready? Have you been rehearsing? I mean, you probably haven't played these.
No. We did a leg of this in December, so it's pretty cool. I use Emery as my band. So we're not going to rehearse, actually, because we did a leg of this thing in December. So I'm pretty bad at rehearsing anyway. So, yeah, just going to wing it on this one. But it's a pretty well-oiled machine, you know. And I think for as far as the Almost side of things goes, it's not something that I've put a ton of time into, you know, in terms of, like, touring through the years. Just no one really gave a shit about any Almost record other than that first one. So I've kind of had to play these songs anytime I thought about the Almost or considered doing it, you know? So I feel like it's just not a big need for practice because they're kind of in the DNA, you know, because I've just done them so many times. So yeah, man.
And is that kind of the idea too, is like you get to sort of have fun with it too?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been kind of that bedroom, you know, it was made on the back of, like, at the time when I made Southern Weather specifically, or like the idea for the Almost, it was like Under Oath was transitioning between Define the Great Line and, or They're Only Chasing Safety and Define the Great Line. So things were getting heavier, but I wanted, like, still wanted the sing-along-y kind of rock song outlet. So it just was really just an outlet. I never had like lofty ambitions or hopes for the thing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, even kind of trying to connect today, you spend a lot of time in the studio. I know you work with a lot of different artists. How often are you in the studio working on music, either your own or somebody else's? Because I know you do a lot of collaborations and a lot of writing.
I work mostly in country music. So I'm you know, like a 40-hour a week job in the studio here in Nashville. As far as my own stuff goes, I don't spend that much time on it, to be honest with you. I kind of feel like the swan song of me being an artist is slowly happening. You know, I think that, like, I mean, Under Oath will always have an audience, I believe, but I feel like, you know, me outside, I don't know. It feels like music is cyclical, right? And I think that where the goods in music is, like in terms of, it's like it's just youth. People want youth. You know, it's like, I mean, other than the Stones and things that make sense like that, I just don't think people want to hear new music from me, really. You know what I mean? So I spend my majority of time kind of helping to prop up other artists. You know, I don't have any visions of grandeur that people care about a 40-year-old's music right now. But I don't know. You know, I mean, if I get inspired, I make something, but I really get inspiration, you know, kind of taking it from other people, you know, and kind of helping them prop up their craft, if that makes sense.
Doing as much writing as you do, how do you know when something's good? Like, is it just something that you feel? Do you have a litmus test to, like, determine, the feeling of things? Or how do you gauge that?
I mean, what is good? You know, I feel like that's so, it's just, there's such a debate. You know what I mean? There's things that I don't like that the whole public likes. And there's things that I think is amazing that has 300 monthly listeners and vice versa. You know what I mean? It's just, there's no way to know if something's good or not. You just got to make what's true. I think that's my biggest thing that I tell people is like, what do you feel like this is true or not? You know, do you feel like this is real? And I think that regardless of how your music has changed so much and it's so fast now, you know, it's not like it used to be where people waited for an album to come out. Now, you know, you can put an album out and 3 weeks later, people are like, that was a great album. What's the next thing? The collective conscience is so quick. So I think authenticity is the only, it's the only remaining marker of quality for music now, because it just doesn't, it's just such an oversaturated business. So I think it's such an oversaturated art, to be honest, which is beautiful in some ways that you can make something in your bedroom and put it out on, you know, 8 hours later or 1 hour, what does it matter? You know what I mean? So I think the only litmus test can be, is this real to the author or not?
Do you ever struggle with like knowing when something is done, like something creative that you're working on, you know, having access to a studio, like it sounds like you do, or even a home studio, you know, sometimes it's paralysis by analysis. We can just overanalyze, sure, overthink things. How do you know when something's done? Is it just a feeling?
I believe that nothing is ever done. Just because you can, especially if it's your own music, you can wrench on that bitch for 10 years.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like if you, and I have like a standalone studio and I purposely have it not in my home. Like I have one acoustic guitar at my house. That's it. I don't even have a set of speakers. Just because I feel like you can just wrench and wrench and wrench and wrench and wrench. I deal with it on a daily basis. You know, artists call you, what if we change the V to the, and you're like, what? Do you know what I mean? So and as you know, being in the business for over 20 years myself, I know that feeling of like, it's never done. Like you can work on a song for, you can do it forever, because you can always, it's subjective. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm sure that the most perfect records to us, the author of those records is like, well, maybe we could have like said this, or maybe the snare could have sounded. It's just, it's never done. And once you say it's done, it's just, you have to just go with it and put it out. Like it's never done.
Working on different genres like you are, you mentioned country music. Does that sort of cleanse your palate when you come to writing music that maybe you're more known for, you know, the sort of, sure, metalcore and emo, whatever, yeah, you want to call it? Does that sort of like, you know, kind of refresh you and also, you know, help with your own songwriting, do you think?
You know, I don't know. It's just so much out there, like I said before. You know, and I think there's so many correlations with everything. And I think the biggest correlation is like, it's coming from you. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're the writer, you're the artist, those two things, you're the writer or you're the artist, those two things, they connect really hard. Do you know what I mean? Like in the heyday of music, you know, you would purchase whatever an artist made because you liked who they were. Do you know what I mean? And you would trust, even if you hated it, you'd purchase it or go listen because you, even if you hated the new music or the new project or whatever. So for me, I just try to be true to myself across all the platforms, whether that's a song for country radio or if it's an Under Oath song. Obviously the shoe is going to be a different style, but it's all got to fit. You know what I mean? Like you can buy a cowboy boot, a ballet slipper, or a fucking steel toe, you know, shit kicker, and they've all got to fit this. They've all got to fit, right? Like they all got to, I wear a size 9 and I got to wear a size 9 wherever I'm at. Do you know what I mean? Like I can't, you get blisters or it falls off either way, you know? So I don't know. I think that spending so much time outside of rock music, when I get to go make it, it does feel like cathartic in some ways, I guess. But I don't know. That's a two beer conversation, you know.
Well, glad to have that with you sometime. Going out on tour.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Going out on tour with Emery. I mean, you guys have had a close bond with those guys for so long. You know, how much does your relationships and really kind of like trust in others and other bands or people, how much does that play into part of maybe some of your success, or, you know, even just being a part of the music business? Is that an element to that that's important to you?
I think that's the only element. I mean, I'm a firm believer in, like, you can always do something else. Does that make sense? Like, you can always make more money. You can always make more songs. You can always do another tour, but the relationships and the bonds you make with people are, we have this saying, I've had a lot of success, you know, specifically with Under Oath, and we've lived out stuff beyond our wildest dreams, you know, which is, it's kind of cringy to say, but it's just true. You know, we all grew up essentially in trailers in Florida, you know, and so to be in buses and airplanes and have the success that we've had, there's a lot of stories and a lot of history that's behind that. You know, there's a lot of travel that went into that. And it's funny, we talk about this. We were just talking about this a couple weeks ago, but I find that the stories that I tell the most aren't the glamorous ones. You know what I mean? I don't remember the day that, you know, I don't remember where I was when we got nominated for our first Grammy. I don't remember going to the show and what I wore and what my, I don't remember any of that shit. But I can remember, like, staying at some girl's house in 2003 and opening the shower and there was a skunk in the shower. Like, I can remember all of that stuff. And I think all of that stuff is a testament to what builds what matters. And I think that those moments when you're really close because you have $5 a day to eat and survive on, you know, and you're eating the Taco Bell dollar menu, which doesn't exist now, but it did, you know, like, I think those things are the things that stick with you more than the successes. So those relationships and those bonds that are created are way better. You know, it's way better and way more important than all of the other shit. The other shit doesn't matter. And no one will remember these songs in 20 years, 30 years when we're all, you know, sitting on a porch somewhere. Maybe they will, but they probably won't. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't write In the Air Tonight. I know that, you know, with Under Oath. So it's like, yeah, you hold on to what you got. And that's the stuff that matters.
Well, I would kick myself if I didn't ask you, and probably my fan base would fire me if I didn't ask you, and there's no way you're going to remember this, but here in our small little town, Farmington, Missouri, we had a old pizzeria called Bobberino's, and you guys actually, it probably would have been around 2003 or, yeah, probably three. You guys actually played. You played outside. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen. A local-ish band to our area, Not Waiting But Drowning, opened up at that show. And it was absolutely, and I've been to thousands at this point. It was one of the best performances I've ever seen.
Bobberino's.
Bobberino's Pizza.
Fuck.
You guys played outside.
I have no recollection. I feel awful.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I didn't expect you to.
Like, I feel like I've heard that name, but I don't. Gosh, I think I might be confusing the memory of the place in Bakersfield called Jerry's Pizza that was the hottest place on the face of the earth that we all grew up playing. So I those two are correlated in my mind just because it's the only two pizza places I can remember the band playing. So I'm sorry.
No, but I had to bring it up. Otherwise, like I said, my guys would beat me up.
Kind of, I love it.
Kind of talking about those old days, though. Their only Chasing Safety is turning 20 years old this year, this summer, right?
Yeah, in June, crazy.
So June of 2004, you guys released that. I think you go out on the Warped Tour shortly after. And was that a turning point for you guys and your success? And did things change after that? Was it no longer the...
I mean, things changed slowly and overnight. It was weird because we were basically a local band, you know, from like 2000 until 2003. We'd play like in Georgia and, you know, we were all in school. And then Spencer joined the band in 03, and he joined to play three shows that we had. We were going to maybe break up. Like, we had some out-of-state shows, like in Alabama, North Florida, and somewhere else. And his first practice he came to, we started writing what would become They're Only Chasing Safety. I don't even know why. He was supposed to just practice. So a little-known fact about Under Oath is Spencer's never officially joined the band to this day. He was supposed to just, like, fill in for those shows and then just kind of stayed 21 years now. But we made that album, and we went on the Warped Tour in the summer of 2004, and back then the Warped Tour started earlier, and I think it was the end of May. So that album came out 2 or 3 weeks into the tour. I think it's June 15th, 04, if I can. I'm not sure, man. I'm 40 years old and my brain is not as good as it used to be. But we went on a tour and we had this shitty, horrible bus. It was awful. I remember the bus was older than all of us.
Which is never good.
No, we had never been on a bus. We couldn't afford a bus. So we found one that was fucking damn near free, you know? And it broke down like 2 weeks into the tour, so we didn't see each other. So we were like riding in different places. I was riding in a van with a band called From First to Last, which is where Skrillex came from.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The other guys were on a bus with this punk band. One guy was on a bus with Store of the Year, who was like the biggest band at the time. I can't remember. But the album came out, and we weren't even together. We would just meet up together to play the shows, help push each other. We were keeping our gear on different people's trucks, and it was fucking crazy. And by the end of the summer, and this is the moment I realized it had changed. Every day it got a little bit bigger. You know, we started out that summer playing for a couple hundred people on a side stage, and we were amped on that. Couldn't believe it, you know, that it was that we had grown to being able to play all over the country for 200 or 300 people on what was really our first like actual real tour. And then by the end of the summer, I'll never forget it. There was at the time, the biggest band in the scene was The Used. They were the biggest band in the whole scene, a humongous band. And we were in Boston, the final day of the tour. And you never know on Warped Tour when you're playing, you wake up and you find out, you know, it's not like you don't play at the same, you didn't play at the same time. You could be 11 p.m. or 8 p.m., at 11 a.m. or 8 p.m. and anywhere in between. There was no semblance of order. You know what I mean? So you'd have to. So we woke up and we found out we were playing the same time as The Used. And I'm like, well, shit on a brick. That's we're screwed. You know what I mean? Like they were the biggest band at the time. And I'll never forget. I walked over to the stage and they're getting our stuff on the stage. And I look out and there's thousands of people. And I couldn't believe it. That's in the moment when I realized. And we walked on stage and people knew every single word. And then that same day, we got offered a tour with Coheed and Cambria in the fall. And we went on that tour in October of 2004, and everything's been like it is now since then. It just got incrementally larger, you know, over the weeks, it was quick. So it was really slow, but it was also overnight. Does that make sense? It's like a weird thing with a band where you hear about overnight successes and things change, and it's true, but there's also all this other stuff that's kind of piggybacked into it, you know?
Absolutely. And I know you guys are obviously going overseas this summer and headlining some festivals and playing some American festivals as well. The So What Music Festival, you're playing Grass Pop over in Belgium, Germany, Switzerland. Is there a plan for, you know, you have some of these like full album playthroughs. Is there a plan for celebrating 20 years anniversary?
Of course there is.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, of course there is. But we're just not talking about it yet. I don't know when we're talking about it, to be honest with you. Of course there is.
This is the Vulgar Display Podcast and Pop Punk Pizza Party Podcast, live from the Barn Studio. Got Aaron Gillespie from Under Oath and The Almost. And you'll be coming into town with Emery and The Almost and be playing the full Southern Weather. And that'll be Friday, May 10th at Red Flag in St. Louis. Aaron, we really appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us. And we can't wait to catch you when you come into town, man.
Thank you so much, buddy. I hope you have a good week. Cheers.
Can you feel your heartbeat racing? Can you taste the fear in her sweat? You've done this wrong, it's too far gone. These sheets tell of regret. I admit that I'm just a fool for you. I'm just a fool for you.
Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 25,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/TheBarn. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/TheBarn.